Hi, welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 113 for October 14th, 2007. Coming up in a few minutes.
Scotch whisky is not actually feeding the problem areas of binge drinking, misuse of alcohol, but we believe we have to be part of the solution.
That's Gavin Hewitt, the chief executive of the Scotch Whisky Association. We'll talk more with Gavin about politics and whisky later, but first, let's look at the news. More new whiskies to mention this week. The Balvenie is releasing its annual vintage cask. This year's edition was distilled back in 1974 and has been aging in cask number 17893 until it was selected this year by members of the Balvenie Club. The panel included Whiskey Cast listener and St. Louis Whiskey Club president William Myers, Matthias Nordqvist of Sweden, and John Lee of the UK. Only 189 bottles of the Vintage Cask 1974 will be available worldwide at about $700 U.S. each. Meanwhile, Old Pulteney has a matching pair of 23-year-old single malts headed for the duty-free market. One was aged in ex-bourbon casks, the other in sherry casks. Old Pulteney is hoping you'll buy both and sample them side by side to taste the difference. From Canada now, Crown Royal is releasing a limited edition expression. Cask number 16 is blended using the same method as the traditional Crown Royal, but the blend then gets extra maturation time in cognac casks. It'll sell for about $100 U.S. It'll be a few years before Bruichladdich's latest single malt is ready. Jim McEwen's team is preparing to distill a heavily peated malt to carry the name of Lochendahl later this month. Lochendahl was one of the names for the old Port Charlotte distillery, just up the shore from Bruichladdich. The first 100 casks are being offered for sale at about $3,700 each. There's a link for more details at the Whiskey Cast website. If you're into whiskey collecting, Christie's in New York will hold its first auction of rare whiskeys in December. State lawmakers changed New York's liquor laws to allow for auctions of spirits as well as wines. Christie's Justin Kristoff gives us the details.
It's going to feature a selection of rare whiskeys and also other distilled spirits, cognacs, armagnacs, calvados, and all from private collections. And of the whiskeys that we're featuring, the most unique one is a bottle of 1856 Macallan, and also another great collection of Macallan going from 1926 up to the 1970s, a bunch of rare malts. And the other unique lot that we have is basically an instant collection. It's a 600-bottle lot of vatted and blended and single malt scotches from many defunct distilleries and brands that are no more, you know, assembled by a gentleman over 30 years, basically going out and seeking, going to old cellars and restaurants and bars closing and finding, like, every scotch that was ever made. So it's basically an instant collection for somebody that wants the perfect whiskey collection or wants to open a bar or restaurant with the world's, if not one of the world's best, you know, whiskey collections. And that's estimated at $70,000 to $100,000. So there'll be some, you know, lots of all price ranges and just very interesting things that will appeal to a variety of collectors.
And the 1856 Macallan is the rarest of the bunch?
I think, yeah, I would venture to say it's not the most expensive. The 1926 is actually at 20 to 30, and the Macallan 1856 is estimated at 16 to 24,000. And they're both very, very rare scotches, and you know, we have high expectations for them.
If I can ask, what's being done to ensure the authenticity of some of these whiskeys? Because we've had some problems with fakes being passed off as authentic collectible whiskeys in the past, over the last few years. What's being done to guarantee the authenticity here?
Well, that's a very legitimate concern. We've had the same problem with wines in the past as well, and we have to step up and redouble our efforts and you know, look very carefully at the whole package. Most importantly, where is it coming from? What's the collector? What's the history? Where did he purchase it from? And if you get receipts and purchase records, that can, you can trace the provenance of the product. And that's one thing we look at. And then once you get the product in your warehouse, you're looking at it, you're taking pictures of it, you're sending it to outside experts, you're sending it to the distillery, you're looking at it, the glass, the label, the cork, the capsule, the whole package, the color and the clarity of the product inside of it, and you put together a complete package and profile, and until you feel 100% confident that, you know, you're selling a bottle, like 25 ounces for 20, you know, it's almost $20,000 to $30,000, it's almost $1,000 an ounce, so you're putting, you know, your reputation on the line there, so you have to do it very carefully and thoroughly.
The online catalog has not been released yet, but you'll find a link to the main Christie's website at the WhiskeyCast website. In the last episode, Jim Murray teased us with his selection for the World Whiskey of the Year in the 2008 edition of his Whiskey Bible. Of course, the word leaked out this week, and his choice this year was the Ardbeg 10-year-old. As Jim mentioned, that's the first time he's given the honor to a single malt. Let's stick with the Isla Focus for a minute. The fall edition of Malt Advocate magazine is out. Editor and publisher John Hansel is devoting the issue to the malts of Isla.
Pretty much the first time we've ever done this, a theme like this in Malt Advocate. And, you know, the focus is, without a doubt, on Isla. You know, smoky, peaty whiskeys are literally on fire. And they, you don't get them any better than you get them on Isla right now. I mean, that's pretty much the home base for smoky, peaty whiskeys. And so what I did back in May was go and actually spend 4 days and just visited all the distilleries and toured the distilleries with the distillery managers. And it ended up being like a really large piece, about 8,000 words, which is, you know, the equivalent of 4 or 5 feature-length stories in Malt Advocate all in one. And had a really good time doing it. Had a great time with the distillery managers and just sort of wrote it like as if you were just along with me for the ride. So in addition to that, we take a little historical perspective with Gavin Smith, who looks back at some of the distilleries that used to be operating on Isla, and like a historical perspective of Isla distilleries, and to see where we've come from on Isla. And then one of our other writers, actually one of our non-whiskey writers, Steve Beaumont, who was actually at the Isla Whiskey Festival, wrote a piece on that. And then on top of that, we have another feature that looks at one of the most legendary whiskeys that ever came off of Isla, which was Black Bo Moore. So that's basically our focus, the main focus on our new issue of Malt Advocate magazine.
And let's talk about the festivals, because this is a busy time for you. You're getting ready to head to San Francisco for the first time, right?
That's correct. Two Tuesdays from now is our first event in San Francisco, which we're very excited about. Things are coming along very nicely for that, and we're looking forward to a really good show. And then, of course, the week after that is our 10th anniversary of our New York event, and that's also going to be very exciting. You know, we're very happy to have hosted Whiskey Fest in New York for 10 years, and you know, now that we've expanded it to first to Chicago and now to San Francisco, what we're trying to do is basically take our magazine and bring it alive and be able to, instead of having you just read about the whiskeys and see them visually in the magazine, to be able to actually meet the people who make the whiskeys and taste the whiskeys themselves. And I'm hoping now that you'll live close enough to one of these three cities where you can maybe come out and join us for one of our events.
Are there still tickets available for either one?
There still are tickets available for San Francisco, and New York is either sold out or is just about to be sold out. We may have sold out of our VIP tickets for New York, but you know, we're really getting really close to selling out in New York. So just for those who are interested in coming to New York, better give us a call or go online.
There's a link to Malt Advocate's website at the WhiskeyCast website, and if you'll be attending Whiskey Fest in New York, be sure to say hello if you see me. Events like Whiskey Fest are a great way to sample new whiskeys, as well as some you may never get to try any other way. I'll also be heading to Toronto this coming weekend for Whiskey Live Toronto. That's followed by Malt Advocates Whiskey Fest San Francisco on the 23rd, and the New York edition on the 30th, as John mentioned. There's also the Lindoris Whiskey Society's annual festival in Oostende, Belgium on October 27th and 28th, followed by Whiskey Live South Africa in Cape Town from October 31st through November 2nd. The Philadelphia Whiskey Festival is November 1st. The inaugural Pittsburgh Whiskey Festival is the 2nd. Whiskey Live Glasgow is November 2nd and 3rd, along with the Oslo Whiskey Festival in Norway. There's a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. These are boom times for the whiskey business. This past week, Diageo received local approval for its new $80 million malt distillery at Rose Isle in Murray. It's the first all-new malt distillery to be built in Scotland in 30 years, and comes at a time when Scotch whiskey exports are growing at about 4% a year, and added up to almost $5 billion last year. I talked with Scotch Whiskey Association Chief Executive Gavin Hewitt about the explosion in whiskey sales worldwide.
It's not just Scotch whiskey, but of course Scotch whiskey is the biggest of the brown spirit category. It's a global drink. There are more expressions of Scotch whiskey than there ever were before. Everyone just as good as the next. And it's fascinating to see just how the young population, how the aspiring population in Asia, Latin America, are seeing, and in Europe, are seeing this as a drink, which is one of those fabulous expressions of who you are and what you are.
What are the big political issues you face? Because you do face a few around the world, from the issues in India to Mr. Chavez in Venezuela deciding that he should slap taxes on it because it's too luxurious for his people.
Shall we deal with President Chavez first? One of the great joys is that President Chavez's attempts to stop people enjoying life and enjoying some of the great things of life is very unsuccessful. We're absolutely certain. We're annoyed by Chavez's comments. We're annoyed by his controls over foreign exchange. But it is very interesting that the people who are drinking whiskey are drinking even more and better whiskey in Venezuela. I don't think he'll be successful there. India is a different matter.
Of course.
We've had some wonderful successes, I think, in India. We've been trying to tell the Indians they need to get their act together in terms of their World Trade Organization obligations. They are a member, they're a significant member, and I think they have finally been persuaded that they have to live up to their obligations, and their abolition of the additional duty in India, which was instigated by the Scotch Whiskey Association, pursued through the European Commission, is one of, I think, our great successes.
But you still face the problem with increased taxes at the state level that New Delhi doesn't seem to be able to do anything about.
I think it's interesting. Initially, people were concerned about what was happening at state level. Delhi is a very good example. Delhi is surrounded by states which have low taxation. Delhi has not put tax up on Scotch whisky. It has not yet introduced a countervailing duty on Scotch whisky. So one of our big markets there, we're doing extremely well. Maharashtra, Mumbai, tried to apply a 200% ad valorem tax, which was indeed the rate which they charged to IMFL in market. They realized no one was buying whiskey at that stage and they were losing revenue, and they've had a big serious rethink. So there's been a new regime introduced, not yet promulgated, but a new regime introduced on which we think we can do extremely well in Maharashtra.
What other markets do you face significant challenges in? Because I know that China is an exploding market for Scotch whiskey. Are there fears that perhaps it could overwhelm the supply and demand equation?
I think it is a very interesting thing, the growth which we're experiencing, the demand in new countries. I use India as one. If we get our tax and our tariff regime right, we're going to find the explosive growth in India, just as we've had explosive growth in China. I think it just makes Scotch whisky more and more interesting, because it's not there flooding the market. It's going to be there as a very high premium drink. It allows premiumization of Scotch whisky, which probably is the first time we've been able to do this for 20 years.
One of the other big concerns is climate change, and I know it doesn't affect you really from the distillery point of view, except that there's a lot of problems with snow and rain in Scotland, and a lot of water problems. What's being done to try to make the Scotch industry more carbon neutral, or to try to solve some of the climate issues that the industry does face?
I think it's a very good question, because in fact I have just initiated a major strategic review of our environment policy. Policy where we need to start looking at our carbon footprint, looking at our energy efficiency, looking at our water use and water efficiency, right down the supply chain. Not that we are not doing a good job. We've actually already surpassed the UK targets which they asked of us. We're already beyond the 2010 targets in 2007 on energy efficiency and emissions. We just need to continue to do better, because climate change is a challenge. It affects the industry just as it affects all other industries. We have to make sure that we conserve our make sustainable our barley, our wheat, our water, and produce exactly, with all of those natural ingredients, the best possible drink in the world.
And I know that you're worried about barley prices to a certain extent, because I know they've risen this year. What can be done to try to minimize the impact of that on whiskey production?
We have to face the market. We have to recognize that only 2 years ago, barley prices were very low, and we were probably doing because there was plenty of barley on the market. We do buy 95% of our barley from Scottish sources. We can't ever say we're going to supply 100% from Scottish sources, because we don't want to be totally subject to climate and the weather, and we can't find ourselves actually denied the ability to produce. But we do are very proud of the fact that we actually buy from Scotland. We have to accept that the market will change. I don't think that the high prices that are currently prevailing will in fact be the high prices which will prevail into future years. It's going to be dependent on climate, it's going to be dependent on harvests, it's going to be dependent on the demand for cereals. Ethanol production is not affecting barley prices. It's the shortage and the bad weather which has affected barley prices, particularly in Europe. And I'm absolutely sure that the high prices we're facing at the moment will probably moderate, and there will be a good return for both the farmers, for the maltsters, and for the Scotch whisky producers.
Any other issues that you're facing on the political and legal end that we should know?
I think alcohol and responsibility, alcohol and health, alcohol and society are our biggest challenge. Scotch whisky is not actually feeding the problem areas of binge drinking, misuse of alcohol, but we believe we have to be part of the solution. In Scotland, Scotch whisky is preeminent. It is the big industry, and we have to play our part. We have to lead the rest of the industry to show it's not something that is going to happen overnight, but we must actually have a cultural change in attitudes to alcohol. And as I said, you know, we don't mature our whisky for 10 years simply to be sloshed back. That's not what's happening, but we have to get that message out, that drinks are there to be enjoyed, to be savoured, and not there so they can go out in the evening and get smashed.
Tell me about your first experience with whisky when you were growing up.
I remember my father was, in fact, a Glenmorangie drinker. And very interesting, because I didn't really like it, my first taste, I remember well. But when I went to Brussels for the first time in 1970, I took my father's whisky, I bought the one whisky he liked, to Brussels, and I took a case on my first arrival, and I was a second secretary, third secretary in the mission to the European Union, or European Communities as it then was. And I found that all my guests around the dinner table enjoyed that whisky enormously. So I decided on my first Christmas and New Year back in Edinburgh, which was my hometown, I would actually import duty-free for my diplomatic friends 30 cases of whisky. It was Glenmorangie whisky. And I sold it at duty-free prices to the diplomatic community, totally legally, at cost price plus the freight which I'd paid to bring it in from Edinburgh to Brussels. I had got rid of 30 cases in 24 hours. And people loved it. So I would say that maybe Glenmorangie owes me one. I was their first ever export salesman.
By the way, the SWA's latest legislative proposal is getting some legs in London. Prime Minister Gordon Brown's government plans to ask Parliament next year to approve new standards for Scotch whisky, along with formal definitions for the categories of Scotch whiskies. That includes the lamented blended malt definition to replace vatted malt. It also includes protection for the names of Scotland's whisky regions, so that distillers in other countries can't use terms like Speyside and Highland to describe their whiskies. Finally, a couple of weeks ago, we talked with Ingvar Ronda, the editor of the Malt Whiskey Yearbook, about the 2008 edition that's just off the presses. I received my copy of the yearbook this week. I'd like to thank Ingvar for the nice mention that he gave to WhiskeyCast in the yearbook, and you'll find a link to the yearbook's website at the WhiskeyCast website. That's all for this episode. Join me next time from Canada, where I'll be attending Whiskey Live Toronto. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. You'll find every past episode and complete links at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2007, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.